Chasing China.
Ni hao and welcome back everyone to Chasing China. I'm Zara, your host and guide through the mesmerizing journey of expat life in Beijing. Each week we will have engaging conversations with incredible individuals who share their unique perspectives and experiences of navigating life in China. Whether you're a seasoned expat, considering a move, or simply curious about life in China, this podcast is here to offer you a front row seat to see what it's truly like to live, work, and thrive in Beijing. But before we dive into today's episode, don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss out on the exciting and valuable insights our guests have to offer. Now, without further ado, let's get started on another adventure of Chasing China. And today I'm very happy to present you Tilman. Tilman is a conflict mediator, executive coach, interpersonal communication expert, and cross-cultural consultant. I was very lucky to have the opportunity to participate in one of his intercultural trainings. And I think I already mentioned some interesting insights of his training in previous episodes. And today we can dive deeper into some of these topics. Therefore, I'm super excited to welcome you here today.
Yeah, thank you. Me too.
So I start every interview with throwing out a word or phrase related to China. And you have to share the first thing that comes to your mind. You got it?
Yes.
Okay, let's start. Presentation of China in Western media.
Distorted.
Environment in China.
Improving.
Technology.
Fast in China.
Chinese language.
Difficult and easy at the same time.
And last but not least, cultural diversity.
Important and an opportunity for synergy.
Great, thank you. So can you tell us a bit about yourself and your journey to becoming an intercultural coach, especially in China? And also, why did you come to China in the first place? How long have you been here? And yeah.
Yeah, so I used to work for General Motors in HR for 15 years and quit my corporate career in order to become a coach and to move to a country that was challenging me cross-culturally because I felt that this would be an opportunity for growth and that I really enjoy this international environment and I enjoy big cities. So I want to go where the growth is. So I decided to explore Asia and travel through Asia for 3 months to see which city I want to live in and fell in love with Shanghai. And then because I'm a German, I like to prepare. So I went back to Germany and prepared for 1 year. So I was taking a coaching training, nonviolent communication training, a business mediation training. I was preparing mentally and culturally and also language-wise for China in this 1 year and came to China end of 2014 for one entire month to network and look out for a job. And I was lucky to find one. As an intercultural consultant in a German cross-cultural consultancy. And then I went back and gave up my apartment and moved to China. And that's how it started. That was around 9 years ago. And then I worked for this cross-cultural consultancy part-time and was part-time also a freelancer as a coach. And career transitioning consulting was also something I was doing at the time. And then after 1 year, I realized, or already a few months into my time here in China, I realized that I don't really make enough progress with the language. So I decided that I needed to take one time off from work in order to really dive deeply into it. After 1 year, I took 6 months off and went to Kunming, which is a city in southwest of China, and where the weather is very good all the time. It's around 25 degrees all the year. I went there as a student, really studying every day in university. And after 5 months, my Chinese was comparable to that of 3 weeks of Spanish course. So you can say a few words, you can say a few sentences, but if the counterpart does not reply exactly according to what you learned in the book, you don't know what to say and what the other person said. And luckily, 9 months later, I met my wife here, who didn't speak a single word of English because she was a Russian translator. So she was Chinese and or is Chinese and from Mongolian minority. So she grew up close to the border of Russia and learned Russian and no English. So I was forced to speak Chinese, and she was luckily very patient with me at the beginning. And well, meanwhile, things have changed. She learned German, and now at home we speak, most of the time we speak German, so 80% probably. Only when we have an argument, we switch to Chinese because she doesn't want to be inferior during the argument. So, yeah, that's the situation. And 5 years ago, I started my own business as a executive coach and leadership trainer and also cross-culture consultant. Yeah, that was really something I never regretted, because it gave me freedom as an entrepreneur and freelancer. And at the same time, I really do what I love doing. I enjoy my work very much, and I can grow and I can help people. It's needed in the market. It's paid for. So it's really a perfect place to be at. And looking back to this decision, which was quite courageous at the time, to just give up everything in Germany after 15 years of corporate career to move to a country where no one was waiting for me, I have to say I'm so happy that I took that decision, because it really changed my life to be a very happy and fulfilled person doing work that is really contributing to other people's well-being and also effectiveness and better communication. And yeah, that's kind of my story.
Wow, that's impressive. And I think sometimes it's these difficult decisions that at the end lead to the best things in life. So good that you decided to leave everything behind and come to China. But now I have another question. So you said you are working with different companies, but are you working mainly with foreign companies, or with what clients or companies do you work with normally?
Yeah, so I work mainly with multinational corporations, and most of them are also German corporations. And I work with Germans and with Chinese. Many of the Germans left after COVID, so around 50% of the German expats left, which also meant that many Chinese had to step up and go into or fill these positions, which then also required them to learn to behave more globally, or let's say to be able to communicate at eye level with the global leaders. And that meant for many to skill up in the area of executive presence and also cross-cultural communication. And that is something that I do a lot, that I help Chinese leaders to learn about their blind spots when communicating with Germans and with other Westerners. And that is often quite eye-opening for them, because some of the Asian cultural heritage, I would say, I call it the Confucius DNA, has sending mixed messages, or let's say sending messages that are potentially interpreted in the wrong way by the counterparts in Western countries, like, for example, humbleness and low-key and everything that goes together with some kind of submissive positioning, does often lead to Westerners feeling superior or interpreting this as weakness, which is of course not the case. It's actually a form of showing respect. But in the Western culture, or in many Western cultures, in Germany I can say for sure, you need to meet each other at eye level so that you receive respect and you give respect also from eye level to eye level. And that is quite a difference. And for that reason, sometimes the beginning of a relationship starts in a more awkward way when a Chinese with the best intention goes into a position of low-key humbleness and giving face to their counterpart, which actually is a beautiful gift of emotional safety, because it says, I'm not threatening, you don't have to be afraid. And it's and you let the other person shine. But on the other side, they don't understand that cross-cultural game, which it is. And so they may interpret this as weakness or as an invitation to look down on them. And that, of course, makes the Chinese person feel not respected. And that can then lead to quite a cross-cultural misunderstanding and vicious circle.
Okay, very interesting. So you already mentioned some cultural differences now. But how does the work environment in China generally differ from that environment of other countries? And what are some common challenges companies or people face here? So what else can you tell us about this?
Yeah, there are quite a few challenges. And actually, you could say that Germans and Chinese have the biggest difference of each other, you can imagine. So in all cultural dimensions where you can compare cultures with, be it relationship orientation versus task orientation, be it analytical versus pragmatic or indirect communication versus direct communication, they are really always at the opposite side. And that creates gaps that need to be bridged. And at the same time, it also creates opportunities for synergy. And some of the challenges that many Germans face when they come to China is that Chinese have more of an attitude of going fast and shortcut and being pragmatic about solutions, going for 80% rather than 100% as a way of being fast. And that strategy has been very effective in the past decades in China and was also necessary. While in countries where there is a certain saturation and there is a certain level reached, there is more room for focusing on the 100%, and that is kind of a luxury. So the Pareto principle says you can do 80% of the results with 20% of the time, and the remaining 20% costs you 80% of the time. And that is, of course, something that you need to be able to afford. And in Germany, after the Second World War, we were also not building the best houses. We needed to be fast to give everyone shelter. And in China, it is also about catching up and, yeah, coming to eye level with the rest of the world in terms of industrialization and products and everything. And I often joke that when Pudong was built, so the skyscrapers in Pudong and Shanghai, if they were built by Germans, probably there would be one skyscraper, and this skyscraper would be really perfect, but no other ones. But in China, things have to go fast, and it's impressive. It's really impressive, and I think that's something where Germans can really learn, not to always go into over-engineering, and to see what can be also done with only 80%. And at the same time, the Chinese can also learn, and I think they do also admire that part from the Germans to sometimes go into more perfection and go for 100%. And that's probably where a lot of the frustration lies when Germans and Chinese work together. But that's only one area. I would say one other typical area where there is often a challenge is, for example, in meetings or conference calls, especially when those that are dealing with Chinese are not living in China and are not used to Chinese culture, or let's say are not trained through cross-cultural training how to interpret this, that when there are people from different cultures in one conference call, there are some cultures, the so-called multi-active cultures, that speak over each other easily. And that's nothing that is disrespectful. They just show engagement with talking at the same time and interrupting each other. That is maybe typical for, or more typical for, South Europe or South American people and cultures. And then there are so-called linear active cultures where you have this ability of jumping in right in this moment when the other person finishes their sentence. And then there are also those cultures where you need a certain pause, silence, to feel comfortable that you can speak. They are called the reactive cultures and typically are more the Asian cultures. And this is a challenge when these three cultures come together, because the Asian cultures, or those of Asian cultures, are waiting for pause never to come. And that's where it is required to build up a certain awareness around that, and then give those in the call also a chance to speak by either asking directly or leaving pauses, having this awareness. And there are other factors as well. One is about introversion, extroversion, where introverts in China are not discriminated. In the Western countries, introverts are normally discriminated. And you can see this in school, where you have your written exam and the oral grade. And if you're an introvert, your oral grade is often not as good as your written grade. And in China, the oral grade doesn't count, and it's more the written grade that counts. And if you're good, you're good. And it doesn't matter how much you talk and ask questions to the teacher, that is not relevant. And that's where the introverts have a fair chance to compete with the extroverts. Whereas, in Western countries, introverts have to learn to become extrovert, or at least to show extrovert behavior. And for this reason, it seems as if in China, there are more introverts than extroverts, but probably it's just that the introverts can be themselves. They are not discriminated. And the same is true also in career. So it is okay to not talk so much and be more introvert. It's accepted. Yeah. And of course, English is also another obstacle for many Western countries. English is much easier to learn. For Chinese, English is much more difficult to learn. So to get to the same level, they have to put in so much more. And that's another obstacle that keeps away people from speaking up. And there are some factors that play a role.
Yeah, and it's true that like in Western countries, often introverts are more discriminated. And you not only see that in schools, also in high management position, right? So normally people get promoted when they're loud, the more that they are present. So you have to be present and loud in order to be seen and to get the position. So I think that's a nice thing, or something we can learn, that you don't have to change your personality to become a leader. And I think that's a great thing. And also related, you said that Germany and China are on the opposite sides of a lot of things. And you mentioned this relationship-based behavior. And although family holds significant importance in China, there are moments when it seems that work might be even more important. And this duality can be very confusing sometimes. So can you tell us more about this balance between family and professional commitments?
Yeah, so this is actually interesting because on the one hand, we all know that family is very important in China, and there are many occasions where this is stressed. And I mean, the Chinese New Year is a time when the family comes together, and family is the place of absolute trust. So there's a lot of emphasis on the importance of family in China. And at the same time, it's not the highest priority, because there's something that trumps the family, which is duty. So there is something like an attitude of being always on duty, meaning that when the boss calls, when hierarchy is in the game, you need to follow that. You need to sacrifice actually your family. By the way, sacrifice is also a motive that is very important in the Chinese culture, or not a motive. It's a way of showing things, showing that you really mean it, showing even love and care. It is a way of underlining that you are even willing to sacrifice something, but it is also something that you need to sacrifice as an individual for the sake of the group. That is part of this group cultural thing. So family is not as protected in the sense of time, at least, as it is in Germany, where you have clear separation between private and work, and there is no expectation whatsoever that your boss can call you over the weekend or in the evenings. And I would say in China, in the multinational corporations, there is generally also this understanding, but there are always more exceptions possible, that some leaders, when they just want to get their emails cleaned up over the weekend and they send out some emails, that they immediately get a response from their direct reports, which may make them, if they are an expat, with that expectation that no one should work on the weekend apart from them maybe cleaning up the emails, makes them feel bad. And so the boss comes first, and you have to show it, you have to sacrifice. So sacrifice is really something important. I just recently heard from someone who asked a Chinese, how could you summarize in one word how to win trust with a Chinese? And the Chinese said, sacrifice. So it is really what drives trust and what drives connection, and also the so-called guanxi, so this having relationships with people that are influential, building up your network, being able to get access to resources that are scarce. And that is where sacrifice is the way of showing each other that you really mean it, that you maybe even give back with sacrifice. And in a private relationship, in a romantic relationship, sacrifice plays also a high role. You need to sometimes show sacrifice. By the way, sacrifice can also be shown through carrying a heavy, bulky gift from, let's say, from Germany to China. So one of the most popular gifts from Germany for Chinese is a cooking pot set by WMF. That is very interesting because it means, first of all, thinking of the other person when you're far away, that gives face. The second thing is you can only buy one or maximum two of these cooking pot sets because they are so bulky. You cannot carry so many. So it gives face because the person seems to be so important that you do this. And then it was so heavy, and the weight itself is already giving face and is giving a sacrifice and showing carrying this so heavily all the way from Germany to China, that is really a sacrifice. And then it's a brand that is known, that shows quality. It's a German brand. Plus, it is practical. And it has to do with what Chinese love, cooking and food. So this is like the perfect gift for Chinese from a German perspective.
Oh, okay. That's good to know. So next time when I am back in Germany, I will buy one WMF set just in case I'm invited to a Chinese party. So we already touched on communication, and communication styles can vary greatly across cultures. And I remember some interesting things I learned in our training. For example, that silence is not seen as bad or uncomfortable as it is in Western countries. So for example, people in an elevator don't do this typical small talk here. Yeah, why is that? And what other differences or communication challenges have you observed in business contexts? And also, how do you help bridge those gaps?
Yeah, so silence is not a threat. Silence is meaningful, and that is what you could say. But it all depends, of course, on the context. And you cannot say that in general, Chinese are silent or need always silence. There are many situations where the opposite is the case. For example, in a restaurant, when Chinese feel very comfortable with each other, then they can be also very loud. And to a degree where Germans say this is not considerate. And by the way, I would say that the topic of consideration is really something that for Germans is one of the biggest challenges coming to China, because we grow up as Germans with a certain conditioning, and we learn it also the hard way as children, to be considerate. So we know this, that when we play as a child and we are in a room with other people, that we get scolded, you have to be quiet. Yeah, there are also other people. And this is something that Chinese do not learn, at least not in the public sphere. And in China and Germany, we also have the reinforcement of every individual in the public sphere. So everyone becomes a small policeman, making people aware of this is not okay, this is not allowed, you should do this, you should not do that. And in China, you have a very quite extreme separation between in-group and out-group, meaning that the people that you know, that you trust, that is your family, your very good friends, belong to the in-group, and that's where you put all your resources in, you show sacrifice, you make gifts, you show care. Especially care is a Chinese value that really plays a high role in many, many situations. And in the out-group, all this doesn't necessarily show up. I'm not saying that it never shows up, because it also depends again here on the context. There are situations where in the outgroup you establish a short relationship with someone. For example, if you ask for help in this moment, you get great help. Chinese are very friendly and helpful, even if you don't know them. But if you're kind of like part of a mass of people that have no real face or are not really like perceived as people in from their perception this moment, there is also not much consideration. Plus, there's also no one who is reinforcing that in any way, because there's no expectation. But there's also no complaint if you do not show consideration yourself. But this is where Germans really struggle a lot when some things do not work the way how they learned it, how they believe it should be right, what they believe is common sense, and so on. And one example is maybe in the subway, when you expect that everyone knows it's better to wait until everyone leaves who wants to leave, then there's more space for those that want to enter. But in China, because it's a fast speed society and people have this inner sense of urgency, and they have grown up in times where there were not enough resources for so many people, there is this I have to be fast, I have to go in no matter what, and there's kind of like a war zone feeling. You have to be selfish, otherwise you don't get anywhere. And that is something that often triggers Germans. And that's just one example. I think those that drive here have the same, that this zipper method, this everyone is fairly sharing the next, giving the next one the chance to zip in into a narrowing street or something like that, is not working the way how it works in Germany. It also has to do with how you relate to rules and regulations and laws. In Germany, laws are perceived as something that protects you. So the relationship to laws is more positive. And people feel also safe if everyone sticks to the law. That's part of the German culture. And that's also why everyone is reinforcing it. While in China, laws are more perceived as a way of being punished. But also they learn to live with the ambiguity of gray zones, where there is, in theory, a law, but it's not reinforced, so it doesn't really exist until the moment that it gets reinforced. And then everyone is learning their lesson in this moment and sticking to it. But this concept of sticking to rules and seeing the sense in having them is different. And in China, people create their safety more through relationships and through guanxi. So guanxi is really the way how you actually, you can even stand above the law with good guanxi. You can make things that are threatening because of breaking the law and maybe being caught in the act, you can make them undone if you have the right guanxi. And that is the way they learned to deal with this. And it is really, it's just a different way that has to do with the different challenges that they were facing in different times. And one thing is maybe important in this context, culture is always rational. Everything in culture, every behavior had or still has a reason. And when we come to another country, it very often triggers us to see the blind spots of other people or of that culture. And it's easy to feel superior in this moment when actually we also have these blind spots. When you don't understand where something is coming from, then there is a high temptation to judge it. And so one of the things that I also teach in cross-cultural trainings is that whenever you feel the judgment, and that's part of learning to become self-aware, to step back for a moment and ask yourself with curiosity, what did I miss? What could be the reason? And try to ask around as well, if you don't know the reason, what could be the reason for this kind of behavior? Because at the end of the day, everything we do and say is an attempt to meet a need. And maybe this need doesn't exist anymore, but there is a habit that now seems to not make sense anymore. But at the time, it was useful and was the right thing to do. And I think we all know the cheers that when we are in a bar or in a situation where we cling the glasses together, this is not what we today think it is about. It used to be to make sure that we are not poisoning each other. So by hitting the glasses hard, the liquid would exchange, and that was the sign of I don't poison you, you don't poison me. No one knows that. Oh, well, now more and more people know this again, but many forgot about that, and we still do this, and we kind of converted the need from safety to connection to celebration to respect. Yeah, that is just one example of many where culture shows up in a certain way through behavior, and at the same time, the original reason is maybe gone. And some things that we see today in China maybe used to have a reason, but now not anymore. And then we can maybe judge it for what it looks like now. That doesn't make sense that they do it this way, but it used to. And it's important that we acknowledge that and that we really approach people of any other culture really from this position of I'm okay, you're okay, trying to look through and connect with the humanness in each other. And I would say that if you don't have any cross-culture training and you don't know anything about a culture, if you really connect from human to human in this I'm okay, you're okay style, in not putting yourself above the other person, you're pretty safe. And Chinese are very forgiving as long as you have that attitude. The moment you put yourself a bit above, they have a very fine radar of someone else feeling superior. And of course, like, no one likes that. They also don't like that. And yeah, so it's good to remember and to always catch yourself in the act.
Okay, wow. Those were a lot of fascinating insights and comparisons about Chinese culture, and especially the perception of rules and laws in China is so interesting. So some people, I think, have the prejudice that Chinese are very rule-following. But as you described it, that's not entirely true. As long as rules aren't really lived or enforced, not a lot of people follow them. And the example with the super merge, so that here, unlike in other countries, there's not this unspoken rule to let every other car in, also emphasize the theme that Chinese, due to the past experience they've made, prefer to be quick and be the first. But talking about all these differences, I think, as you say, it's so much better or important and makes life easier when we approach such cultural differences with curiosity instead of immediately judging them. And therefore, I think it's great that with the work you're doing, you can have such a positive impact in this area. And, oh yes, also regarding this consideration part, I can definitely approve that Germans, or at least me, had a hard time with that at the beginning, because I didn't expect that or also didn't know that. And just this little example that when somebody in front of you goes through a door and does not hold the door open, or that sometimes in Chinese restaurants, people watch something very loudly on their smartphone and they don't care if you're disturbed or not, is very, very interesting. But yeah, it's just a difference. So yeah, but at the end you mentioned this I am okay, you are okay thing. So I also heard you talk about this topic in other podcasts and you called it transactional analysis. Can you tell us what this is all about?
Yeah, so transaction analysis is a psychological framework that assumes that we communicate from mainly three different so-called ego states. And they are the parent ego state, the adult ego state, and the child ego state. And you could, to simplify it, say the parent ego state comes from a position of I'm okay, you're not okay. And the adult ego state from I'm okay, you're okay. And the child ego state from I'm not okay, you're okay, like more inferior. Or if I'm not okay, then you're also not okay, like more rebellious. And you can use this framework in many ways. It is very eye-opening in communication because there are different sub-ego states, like controlling parent ego state is more the strict person, the judging and superior. And the nurturing parent, you could say, is more the soft side, this overprotecting, overcaring, and helping without permission. And the adult ego state, the functional adult ego state, is more about the rational side of analytical, logical data exchange or facts, figures, and data. And then there is the child ego state, which is split up into the adapted child ego state, where it's about compliance and feeling inferior and weak, maybe, and not confident, and pleasing others. My needs do not count. The counts of others are more important. And then there's the rebellious child ego state, which is all the opposite, like I'm against it. I say no. I think it's unfair, and maybe punishing the other person by not doing something or by shooting back. And then there's the free child, which is the ego state where you can be in the extreme very selfish, self-centered. You don't care about others. You play by your own rules. But in the good sense, it is about humor, playfulness, joy, and authenticity, and creativity, and dreaming, and so on. And this concept is very helpful in the cross-cultural context as well. And I already mentioned that at the beginning, that when two Chinese meet for the very first time, they often approach each other from this position of low-key, from adapted child ego state. So I'm not okay, you are okay, giving the other person face, looking up. And then the other person knows what to do, because this is a cultural game that people grow up with. And it means you have to also give back, and you have to also show humbleness. So the Chinese culture is a culture of balance. So you have to do the same thing. And so the other person actually says, no, that's not true. And I'm actually the one who is low-key and is not threatening and is not so important, but you are so great, and give praise or face to the other person. And then with this, you create this, so I'm not okay, you're okay. No, I'm not okay, you're okay, and then we both are okay. And in Western culture, and at least in German culture, you have directly, I'm okay, you're okay. That's how you meet and how you find eye-level respect. And when a Chinese meets a German, then you have this issue of coming from the position of I'm not okay, you're okay, from the Chinese to the German, and the German sees this as, well, I know I'm okay. Well, if you say you're not okay, I believe you. And then this is received by the Chinese as not fair and not respectful, and they're angry. But in the Chinese culture, it's not so common and good to react with anger in a relationship like that. So harmony is a value. So you should not go into rebellious child ego state. But of course, you have rebellious feelings, but you're not allowed to express them. So you need to express them in another way. And what then often happens is that Chinese find another way of punishing that person that didn't respect them by not doing something, or by taking a long, long time, or just saying it is not possible, even though it would be possible if they wanted to. And a typical example that I would say is also connected to another topic that is interesting regarding conflict and how to deal with controversial topics, is that in Germany we have this separation between the subject and the person, and in between is the belt line. And we know when things are on the subject level, and we can really fight hard and have very different opinions, and being even emotional about those different opinions without touching the personal side, so without becoming personal, because we know where the belt line is. But in the Chinese culture, there is not such a separation of subject and person. That's all the same. And the moment you attack the subject, you attack the person, which is the reason why there is indirect communication in the Chinese culture. Because if you are too direct, you hurt the person, and that has consequences for the relationship. And now, in order to overcome this, you really need to, as I said, you need to learn to speak more indirectly, which is a challenge for many Germans. And one example that I want to give where this could be really leading to consequences is when Germans come to China to find an apartment and they have an agent, and the agent shows them, has the plan to show them the best apartment at the end, and starts with some not so good ones. And then those Germans that look for an apartment become very judgmental about the apartment and criticize this and that, and here this is not this German standard and that is not acceptable. And this is all directed only to the subject, to the quality of the apartment. But the Chinese agent would maybe take this personally and see this as an attack on them. And that could then result in just not showing the last one because they are pissed off. And that is something that can happen very often. And I had cases like that when I was coaching individuals coming to China, where they were complaining with this attitude of complaining that Germans like to have often, to that there's no good apartment, and they also told their agent they should really find a better one. And I knew there was probably a good apartment, or they were just not willing to go the extra mile because those clients, those German clients, did not invest into the relationship and maybe have said something that was hurtful for them. And so another topic is really investing into the relationship. And so it's a good idea to bring some sweets from Germany or some chocolate or something. You don't have to bring a WMF cooking pot set, but something that shows your appreciation to the agent as a sign of, I want to have a good relationship with you. And with this value of balance and reciprocity, the agent will feel more obliged to go the extra mile, and sees this as a positive sign of investing into the relationship. And you can of course say, yeah, but this, they get paid, they should do their work. But in China, it doesn't work like that. You don't get good quality necessarily only because they get paid. You need to invest into the relationship, because only then you step a little bit closer to their in-group, and then you receive the care and the dedication and the sacrifice. And they may use their guanxi to reach out to a friend who also is an agent and maybe has access to other apartments, which they would not do if there was not something sacrificed by the client to show that they care about the relationship. So this is really how it works, and you can judge that and say this is not right and so on, but it's a reality. And when you come here as a guest, it's important to also adapt to a certain degree. So you need to adapt to at least 50%. The remaining 50% are voluntary. So you need to learn to eat with chopsticks, but you don't have to eat chicken feet. Yeah, so no one demands from you to become a Chinese. And as I said, Chinese are very forgiving with foreigners as long as they have the right attitude.
Yes, and I think at the end, we all want to have good relationships and a pleasant time no matter where we live. And for that, you have to put effort in, show interest and adapt in some ways, as you said. And what I've also learned from our training is that, especially in the work context, but in general, our goal should always be to become a part of this inner group. And for that, we need this guangxi, which means creating trust, giving face to the other person, showing appreciation, or also sacrificing sometimes something. So listening to you will help a lot of people coming, moving, or visiting China. And it also helps me a lot, because I also had to learn it sometimes the hard way to be more indirect. Because as you said, as a German, I'm always very direct. But when you piss off a Chinese person, then it's very hard to gain their trust back, even though they are very forgiving. So yes, very interesting. So we touched already some misconceptions and also stereotypes. And when talking about stereotypes, then I often think about the spitting part, or also the rudeness of Chinese people. What can you tell us about that? Because I remember in the training you mentioned Confucius.
Yeah, so maybe a few words to the trust topic, because that's, I think, also very important. And you mentioned Guanxi, trust, in-group. So it's actually all related. So the in-group is through focusing on relationship, you are entering more into the in-group, and that is building your Guanxi, and that is building the trust. So the trust is built through creating intimacy in a way that you are giving up your mask and that you show interest for the other person, who they are behind their professional mask, if that's at work, and that you also give away something of yourself. So again, a certain sacrifice as well, sacrifice maybe of your privacy. So Chinese have a deep fear of losing face, meaning that what other people think of them is more important than it is in the German culture, at least. So because it's a group culture, your identity is also defined a lot through what other people think of you. Whereas in the German culture, we also have that. It's not that it's irrelevant. Also, we are social animals or creatures, so we need also the approval in certain ways from others. But we have a journey in life of trying to get rid of that, what other people think of us being so important to us. And we try to, really get free from that. And in the Chinese culture, it is not so much promoted to become free in this sense, but it is more of a complying to the group as such, and being in the group and being part of the group. And when you are threatened to be thrown out of the group by losing your face, that is like almost perceived as an existential crisis or death. Subconsciously, it feels like you may die. By the way, as a side note, the thing that we fear the most is public speaking. And the second biggest fear is death. So the social threat of being judged by others is real for many, many people, and so real that it is even trumping death as the biggest fear. And so it is, it's something that Chinese have, as it is a group culture, more to carry on. Yeah, I'm not sure if I have completely answered your question, so maybe you have to remind me again.
Yes, I mentioned the spitting part. So I remember that you mentioned Confucius and that this whole spitting thing has its roots in the past. So maybe you could tell us a little bit more about this.
So Confucius said that everything that wants to get out of the body should get out. So it's perfectly okay to spit and even fart. But that is, of course, something that is also a bit of a more rural in behavior, and meaning that being a peasant was a long time also an ideal in the communist, in the Cultural Revolution. So being civilized and showing too much education was actually dangerous at a certain time in China. So the ideal was to be like a peasant in order to stay safe, because otherwise you were labeled as being bourgeoisie. And that is also one reason. Another reason why there is sometimes a different, let's say, why some Chinese have less of that kind of behavior that we expect from in the Western culture, is that there is, of course, a big mass of people, many more than in our country, that just didn't have access to the same kind of education. Plus, there was for a long time a different priority, that was survival. And surviving means you don't have much resources to actually focus on things that are nice to have, but not need to have. And for that reason, there is for sure a gap that is not, that is explainable from that perspective. But there are also aspects, for example, the table manners that we have in Europe or in the Western world. They originally come from France, from aristocracy, where they try to actually separate themselves from the rest of the people and to be special and to really, so we are different, we are superior. And when the tradespeople in Europe became more and more rich, or richer and richer, they were actually then trying to adapt to that and also copied that. And then it went through the society and became more and more normal. But this is not the natural behavior. And because this did not exist in China at the time, there are different table manners due to that. And it's not about right and wrong. It's just that we are conditioned for not liking certain sounds because we learned that we must not do this. And this pain that we receive when we had to learn it as a child is something that we cannot accept when other people do this, and it's all on the subconscious level. So we learn to see this as something disgusting or so. But for Chinese, there are other sounds that we make that are also disgusting. For example, cleaning your nose very loudly, and especially at the table, it is not something that is well received, and it's really all relative.
Yes, totally. And I think knowing that and understanding that makes it so much easier to not immediately judge the people. And I think the good thing is that we always can learn and adapt and change our habits if we are willing to change them and if we're open. But let's move on to another topic. I think we all know that China developed a lot in the last years and still is changing. Where do you see China in 10 years?
Yeah, so this gives me a good opportunity to stress something that I just missed to say in what I said before. The new generation of Chinese is, of course, already very different, and a lot of what we see and we talked about now relates more to the older generation, and the younger generation is really different. And it's very, very important to stress this because also for the Chinese, they want this to be acknowledged that there is change from the younger generation. That younger generation often is more rebellious, is seeking for more freedom, for more independence, and do not accept so much anymore. And they express their needs more. So this is definitely something that is changing and that needs to be taken into account when looking at China. And of course, that will also have an impact on the future. So in the next 10 years, China will for sure further develop in this direction of adjusting in some ways to other standards, but there will always be a Chinese way. I mean, we cannot foresee into the future, but for sure there will be a further economic drive, and in many areas China will overtake the West if not already happened, and that is for sure something that has an impact on the world. And I would say there's also one thing that you can already see when it comes to Chinese and Westerners, that Chinese are not swallowing anymore things that are hurtful for their pride. And I understand that. And it's the right to speak up against arrogance or superior behavior. 20, 30 years ago, this was very different. They just swallowed it down. And that was also something where a different kind of leaders could come to China, some that were maybe not necessarily accepted anymore in Western countries, and they were sent to China because there they could just do what they want and Chinese would just accept it this way. This is changing now, and the new generation has a different expectation. I think that this will also have an impact on being able to recruit people for the more conservative areas of the industry or the state-owned companies and maybe even the administration. What I heard is that there's already, it's more difficult for them to find people that are willing to work in this environment because the new generation has a certain expectation about how to be treated. And of course, also, yeah, more self-confidence towards people that criticize or that are showing arrogance and so on.
That's very interesting, and I definitely believe that China will continue to get ahead of many countries in various fields in the future. And I'm so grateful to be here and witness this firsthand, because in the end there's indeed a big difference between learning about things from the media versus experiencing them personally. And something else that came into my mind is, a few months ago I listened to an interview with Oliver Blume. He's a German manager and the CEO of the Volkswagen Group, where he mentioned that China is already not only faster and cheaper in the automotive industry, but also in terms of quality already superior. And that surprised me a lot. Well, we're getting to the end of the interview, but I have one question left. So for someone who might be planning to visit or work in China, what's one piece of advice you wish you had known before you first came here?
I think so. One piece of advice is definitely to take a cross-culture training and to take seriously that you need to really come with the feeling of being a guest and having the right attitude, being low-key, and showing respect and being curious and also wanting to come with an attitude of, I want to learn something from the Chinese rather than I come here and tell them how to do it. So I think this is something important. Yeah, apart from that, I believe that the chances are really when you're open-minded to different ways of looking at things and doing things. It's not about changing yourself to a degree that you cannot live up to your values. But you need to be flexible in that way that you accept that some things are not according to your values. And maybe one other advice is not to come here and cherry pick. So you get the full package, meaning you have all the advantages of what China can give you. And yes, some things are different and maybe less advantage, or there are some things that are a disadvantage. And with that, yeah, you don't cherry pick and think, yeah, but this is better in Germany. And yes, but there are also other things in Germany that are not good and that are really fantastic here. So I think it's really important to look at this and be positive. The way you look at China and the way of looking at this experience of going to China will determine how you perceive it. So it's all about a self-fulfilling prophecy. And if you come here with a negative mindset and with resistance and you don't want to be here, you're just sent and you're just doing it for the money or whatever, you will have a bad experience for sure. And so it's really the way, the attitude, the positive, open, curious mindset that influences how you experience it.
That is a great advice. So thank you for that. But before we say goodbye, I have one final question I ask every guest on this podcast. So if after your time in China, you were to return to your home country, I don't know if that's the plan for you, but if, what aspect, habit or behavior will you bring with you?
I would say probably more action oriented than maybe before. So as a German, you like to plan and think and discuss and find consensus. And in China, they are taking action very quickly and show flexibility and adapt to maybe new changes. And that's something, this pragmatic approach that I think I have already adapted a little bit to my personality, and that influenced me in a positive way.
Great. Thank you so much. It has been a pleasure having you here on my podcast and learn so much about the Chinese culture, even after almost 9 months of living here. So I'm sure that this will not only help people who are coming to China for the first time, or are still new here, but also people who have been here for a while. And especially if you've already gained some initial experiences here and perhaps stepped into a few pitfalls, it can be extremely helpful or even amusing to understand certain situations better afterwards and learn from it. So thank you very much for this great interview.
Thank you very much.
Once again, thanks for joining Chasing China. Subscribe to stay updated and stay tuned for more adventures. Until then, 再见 and happy chasing!